Okay. Here we go. Good evening, everyone. So we'll start out with a review. And since some people were not here last time, this will be a good review, we hope. So we had started a new Mishnah that we had broken down into three parts. And we covered part one. Well, we covered all parts. But we had this monetary assessment worth money before a court of law and by witnesses that are free and members of the covenant. So to break this down into the pieces we talked about, it means the court assesses the value of each damage. So if a cow and a garment are each damaged by the other, the court assesses the cow damage and the court and the cloak damage separately. Oh, sorry, I jumped ahead of myself. The Gemara reads the Mishnah to say that payment is always payment by land, almost always. Then there was the concept of extrajudicial seizure. I can never say that. Where if the person is owed money and it doesn't look like he's going to get paid, he can go and seize it and the court won't make him put it back. Okay. The court has to be composed of learned judges, not just regular people. And the witnesses have to be free, that is not slaves, and members of the covenant, that is Jews. So that was all of the first part of the Mishnah. Then we learned the second part was that women are included in damages. So they are equal to men in terms of having to pay and paying. And the last part, we had three proof texts for that. And of course, the Gemara wanted to point out, why do we need three? And the answer was that no one of them would satisfy the general requirements to prove that. So we had to do it with three different texts. And now the last part of the Mishnah, which is where we're going to start off. Well, we started off, we're going to finish tonight, was this statement of, and the damaged party and the damager are in the payment. And this meant basically that each party suffers a loss. So if my cow damaged your cow, I had to pay you, that's my loss, and you lose the cow, that's your loss, part of the cow. Now, where we ended last time was talking about there was a debate between Rav Papa and Rav Huna over whether the payment here of the damager to the damaged party, to the victim, was compensation or was it a penalty or was it a fine? And that was the big discussion. And there we have it, the debate on whether the payment is compensation or penalty. And Rav Papa says it's compensation. Rav Huna says it's a penalty or a fine. We can use that interchangeably. Now, all this comes, but the three points that are coming up here are, the Mishnah says the damages are shared between the damager and the victim. We also had a law that said, if you do damage and you admit it, you don't have to pay a penalty. And finally, we are back to Tom versus Muad, of which we will talk a lot about tonight. So once again, the Tom was the animal that is not known to be dangerous. And the Muad is the animal that has done something bad three times. So it is now in the category of a known danger. So it's different. When a Tom causes damage, you only pay half the damages because you didn't know it was going to do that. And a Muad, you pay full damages because you should have known better and you should have taken care of your animal. So that's the review from last time. Anybody have a question on that? No, in that case, let's jump in. So when we left off, the Gemara was working very hard to prove that the payment was a compensation and not a penalty. And there were some lines of defense offered, and this is going to be the last line of defense. So we start off with Tashma. You can recognize the word Shma, which means come in here. It's one of those terminology things. And it means that either a proof or the resolution of the problem is going to be given. And this is the general rule. Zehaklal. Whoever pays more than what was damaged does not pay based on his own admission. So the Mishnah defines a penalty as a case where one pays more than the actual damage done. By implication then, if you pay less than the damage done, like half damages, then you are liable based on your own admission. And therefore, half damages are compensation and not a penalty, which means that any payment over half is a penalty. So that's the statement here. Now, the Talmud is going to take this statement and try to draw an inference from it. And it asks the question, does this not mean that less than damaged he pays? In other words, any payment less than the damage is paid due to admission. If he pays the amount equivalent to the damage he caused, then it is compensation. But if he pays more or he pays less, it's a penalty. And this is rejected. No, as much as he damaged, he pays. In other words, he has to make the payment equal to the damage, and that is an admission. So Gemara is now going to question this. And it asks the question, but if less, what? Here too, he does not pay. It's our typical cryptic kind of sentence. So the question is, do you say that if he pays less than the damage, he's paying due to admission? And this reading, well, so if so, instead of teaching, which we just saw a minute ago, this is the general rule. Whoever pays more than what was damaged does not pay on his own admission. It should have said, let it teach. This is the general rule. Whoever does not pay as much as he damaged. Exactly. And that would apply less and more. So again, this reading of the Mishnah is rejected. If the Mishnah had meant to say that anyone who pays more or less than damages, it should have read, as we see, in all cases where the payment does not correspond exactly to the amount of damages. The fact that it doesn't say this means that only if one pays more than the damages, it's considered a penalty. Half damages, therefore, are compensation, and the position that they are a penalty has been refuted. And that's where we get the last word there, tiyufta, refutation, meaning Rav Huna is refuted. So therefore, we come to the conclusion that payment is compensation and not penalty. Okay, everyone absorb that. Because Hilchata, the law is half damages are a penalty. So abruptly, the Talmud now says, after all these slides of proof, that the established halakha is that half damages are a penalty.
Didn't we just say they weren't?
What? Yep.
Didn't we just say they weren't?
We got refutation. That was complete refutation of Rav Huna. And he's the guy who says it's a penalty. But the Talmud now comes along and rules out of nowhere, it's a penalty. And how can the Talmud refute this reasoning and then say it's the halakha? So I want to bring up three very important deep points for us, two of which are going to be here, one on the next slide. So this shows you something really interesting about Jewish law. First of all, it is uncommon, I don't know if it's rare, that the Talmud states what the law is. And that's what hilchata, you see the word halakha in there in the Hebrew. That's telling you this is the ruling of the Talmud. As you know, till now, we rarely see a ruling. So that's point number one. Point number two is the halakha does not follow the Mishnah. The Mishnah said it's not a penalty. And the halakha is it is a penalty. So all this means when you look at Talmud, you need a big grain of salt because things are not necessarily what they appear to be.
One other question, Steve.
Yes.
In your the last word you have there says yes, and in the Hebrew it says ain.
Ah.
And my understanding is that ain was always a negative. It wasn't really no, but it means there isn't, or it's a no rather than a yes.
So prepare to have your mind blown. It's not ain in Hebrew. It's in Aramaic.
Ah, okay.
And in means yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Very confusing. Okay. Why was there a refutation? Because it does not teach as much as the damages. So we just talked about that. It didn't, the language was not equal to, it was as much, it said you pay. So the Talmud now explains why. He could not make it absolute. Who is the he? He is the Tana, he is the guy, the anonymous author right now of the Talmud. What couldn't he make absolute? He couldn't make the law that it's compensation a law. Why not? Since there are half damages caused by pebbles that we have learned in a tradition is compensation. For this reason, it was not taught. So this is really interesting point number three, which you're going to say, how could that be interesting, pebbles? So here's what they're saying. We have a tradition, which I'll get back to in a second. This is something we know, that when you have damages caused by pebbles, which is a case where an animal is walking and it kicks up a stone and the stone breaks something, the tradition is that that is only half damages, not full damages. And it's tradition. A tradition that comes from where? No, hold on for that second. So this type of half damages is compensation. And therefore the Baraita could not teach us that in every case where you do not pay exactly the damage is considered a penalty. So again, what's interesting about where does this come from? What it shows you is halakha and what people are doing is a great big circle in Judaism. So we have a Mishnah, which says compensation. We have a halakha, which says penalty. Here we have a third thing. We have tradition. And the rabbis always read that as, this is a tradition from Moses at Sinai. In other words, it's something we all know, but it's not written down. It's not even really part of the oral law. It's something you learn by being a Jew. And Jewish law is really filled with all kinds of these things right up to the present moment. So laws are added, laws are deleted, laws are changed. Now, for example, in the time of the Mishnah, mourners wore hoods and sat on the floor. That was the law. We don't do that anymore. On the other hand, traditions have started today that are not covered in Jewish law. And this is a really interesting one, which I think everyone will get. If you've been to a wedding in the last few years, when the bride starts walking down the aisle, what happens?
Everybody stands.
Everybody stands. This was not true in our parents' generation. This is literally a 5 or 10 year old tradition in Judaism. And there are actually rabbis who are now writing halakha to justify this. But of course, you know where it comes from. It comes from Christian weddings, because that's what they do. And the Jews are imitating this, and now it's becoming Jewish tradition.
Wait a minute. But in Chabalat Shabbat, in Lecha Dodi, we stand when we talk about the bride of Shabbat, and we stand and bow at the door.
That is true, but when you went to a wedding as a kid, did people stand up?
I never went to weddings as a kid. I was not allowed.
I'll defer to everybody else.
No, I'm just saying, so we stand, but we stand at Kabbalat Shabbat to welcome the bride of the Shabbat, because that's what the tradition is when a bride walks in the door.
Correct, but that's not the same as a live bride or a live bride and groom walking down the aisle.
But we're doing it to welcome the bride, because that's what you do to welcome a bride.
You know what? That's probably the reasoning the rabbis of today use to justify it.
Okay, I'm going to get back to you on this
one. Okay, this is your meat and potatoes. I know.
This is okay. You and I are going to duke it out in the parking lot.
I will just tell you that as far as I know, there is no Jewish tradition of standing for the bride at a wedding.
Okay.
I thought this would be exciting because everyone's seen this, but it's new. And again, the idea that our parents didn't have this, it to me is fascinating. So there's something deep here to learn about Talmud and Jewish law and the way things work. So with that, and this apparently is the halakha, the Gemara is now going to go on to deal with the consequences of this ruling. So, and now that you say half damages is a penalty, this dog who ate a lamb or a cat that ate a chicken is unusual, and it, meaning the penalty, is not collected in Babylonia. So what's going on here? Acts of unusual damage by an animal are classified as horn. Remember, horn, tooth, foot, we'll see that again tonight. And in the case of horn, the owner has to pay half damages because it's considered a tom, an innocent animal. So that's where you get this ruling. Now, by the way, if you're wondering why cat is in green, it's because we adopted a cat and we named him Shunra, which is the Aramaic word for cat. I should say Adam named him that. So that's just a shout out to my cat. Oh. But here's what's really interesting. Again, this is like going beyond the Talmud. So the rabbis in Babylonia perceived of themselves as having less authority than the rabbis in Israel. So while they could adjudicate cases that involved compensation, they didn't want to adjudicate cases that involved penalties. And since the Talmud has now decided that half damages are a penalty, the rabbis in Babylonia are powerless, and they cannot force people to pay when they're liable. So, and that applies in the case of a dog that ate a lamb, Chad Gadya, or a cat that ate a chicken, which is easier to digest than a lamb. So just in that couple of words, it opens a whole dynamic of what life was like in those days. However, it's always got to be qualified, right? And this matter applies to large ones, to large animals. But if it's small ones, this is normal. So if the lambs and the chickens were small, then it would not be unusual for a dog or a cat to eat them. But if they're large, it's considered tooth. And therefore, the owners are now liable for full damages, and the Babylonian rabbis could collect them. So ends that line of thought. And now we come to a new sugya. So this again was quoting from a baraita, and this is the, I'm going to say it right, extrajudicial seizure. But if he seizes, meaning if the victim seizes something of value from the damager, we do not take it away from him. And if he says, set me a date to go to Eretz Yisrael, we set a date for him. And if he does not go, we excommunicate him.
Whoa.
Okay, who? The damager. So we had two ways the victim could receive damages. And that was in a baraita we had two sessions ago. One was, again, the payment by the court, and the other is this act of extrajudicial seizure. So go to back again to the dog or the cat case. In other words, the court can't take property from the damager and give it to the damaged party, right? Because it's a penalty and the court has no power in Babylonia. But if the court doesn't have to take property away, it does, might not have it. Okay, so what's the recourse? The damaged party could then go and try and force the damager to try the case in Eretz Yisrael. Now, no one is going to travel from Babylonia to Eretz Yisrael to pay a fine for a lamb. It's back to the dynamics again. So if the damager refuses to pay, then the court has the power to excommunicate him until he pays. And this seems to be a workaround for this problematic situation of the powerlessness of the rabbis in Babylonia. It also seems to have allowed the rabbis of Babylonia to do two things at once. A, maintain their belief that the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael were superior, and B, allow them to have their own practical authority. It's again, another interesting fact, right? Excommunicate them for a chicken. But in any case, we excommunicate him until he removes the damaging animal in accordance with Rabbi Natan. So this is not just a problem of compensation, it's a problem of getting rid of the animal that causes the damage. Because we have a baraita. Rabbi Natan says, from where is it derived? Minayin in the Aramaic. In other words, what's our proof text? That one should not raise a bad dog in his house or set up an unstable ladder in his house. And we have a proof text. And this is, we've seen this actually before, but it's interesting. So how do we prove that? So here's the quote. Here's the quote from Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 8. And what I want to do is read it to you without the piece in green. When you build a new house, you shall make a parapet, that is a fence, around your roof, lest anyone should fall from it. Now, that's a perfectly good halachic statement from the Torah. You have a dangerous roof, you put a fence on it. But the verse actually reads, when you build a new house, you shall make a fence for your roof so that you do not bring blood into your house, lest anyone should fall from it. So the rabbis ask the question, why do we need that clause in the middle?
It tells you how high, also 4 cubits.
It's not coming from there. It doesn't fit in with the verse. And the answer is because if the verse tells us you must make a fence, in other words, you must protect that which could be dangerous. But the middle verse that says don't bring blood into your house is the other side of the coin. It says you have the authority to remove the dangerous thing from your house.
The building code section of the Torah, everybody knows that.
The 4 cubits, I don't know offhand. So that's an interesting way to read this verse in the Torah. Now we start the last Mishnah in chapter 1 of Baba Kama. And this Mishnah is going to introduce an extremely important concept in Mishnaic damage law, one that we have encountered already, but has not been any of the Mishnayot. And it's about something we know, agents of damage that are likely to damage and those that are not likely to damage. In other words, Tom and Muad. And again, the big difference is for a Tom is half damages, for Muad is full damages. And obviously the idea behind this concept is that if you have an animal that you know is dangerous, you have an extra responsibility to guard it more carefully. And the Torah spoke of this in another verse, which we've seen in the past, with about an ox that is known to gore. So we start off here with five are Tom and five are Muad. Five what? Five animals. And if you like animals, we're going to talk some about it tonight and more next time. Okay. An animal is not a Muad for what? Not to gore, not to push, not to bite, not to trample, sometimes also known as to squat, and not to kick. It means in these five areas, we give the animal the benefit of the doubt and we call it a tom, because these are normal things that animals do. All right, so that's part one of the Mishnah, part A. The tooth is muad to eat what is appropriate for it, right? We expect an animal to want to eat food that it likes, but not things that it wouldn't normally eat, like clothing maybe. So if it eats your corn, it's a tom, but if it eats your shoes, it's a muad, because it's not what is appropriate for it.
Similar to the goat that would eat anything.
You're right, the goat would have no ruling. The goat would always be muad. The foot is muad. Now this is the walking along, because it will break things in the course of its walking. So that's another case of full damages. And the muad ox, in other words, the ox we know is dangerous. And the ox that damages in the domain of the damaged party, which we've covered before and we'll talk a little about tonight. And finally, people. Human beings are always muad, because people are assumed to be responsible for the damage they caused. Now, you will note that the Mishnah only talks about living things here, right? We talked in the past, the first Mishnah, about fire and about the pit. Here we're only talking about living things. So that's part B of the Mishnah. And finally, we have part C. This is the animals. The wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard, the bartalos, and the snake are all muad. Rabbi Elazar says, when they are domesticated, they are not muad, except for the snake. Snake is, you can't domesticate a snake. Now, this is one of the things I really enjoy, which is words, which is philology. So in green, you'll see we have the bartalos.
What is
the bartalos? So many students of the Gemara are perplexed by a mysterious creature called the bartalos, which occurs several times in the Talmud. And they ask, is it a cheetah? Is it a hyena? Is it a polecat? So this is the first reference to bartalos in the Mishnah. The word bartalos is not Hebrew and it's not Aramaic. It is an obvious transliteration of a Greek word, pardalos. And that name originally refers to a leopard. Leopard, pardalos. It's the same, I recall a Shakespeare quote, bearded like the pard, bearded like a leopard. So it originally meant leopard, but because we have leopard here, the nemer, then it can't be leopard. Therefore, the Mishnah thinks it's something else, another spotted cat, and it thinks it's a cheetah. Now, again, I find this very interesting because of geography and real life. So the authors and the audience of the Mishnah were living in Eretz Yisrael, and they were familiar with Greek language. So they probably knew what a bartalos was. But then you go to Babylon, and they didn't have much exposure to Greek culture there, not as much as they did in Israel. So the Babylonian Talmud, therefore, wants to know what a bartalos is, and it concludes it's a hyena. And we will see this a little bit later, and the Talmud's going to wrestle with what this means. And by the way, the normal translation, if you pick up a book somewhere, it'll say it's a panther. So again, this is ancient philology. So that's the end of the Mishnah. So right away, The Gemara starts, and the Gemara's first question is pointing out a contradiction in the Mishnah, a seeming contradiction. So first we learned it teaches the tooth is muad to eat. Right? We said it is the normal way of an animal to want to eat the food that is appropriate for it. Then we infer that this occurs at the damaged party's house. Because if it occurred in your house, it wouldn't be damaging. However, it also teaches an animal is not muad to pay full, but he does pay half damages. So if an ox eats some food, the owner's responsible for the damage. But where does that take place? Obviously on the victim's property. But the Mishnah also teaches that an animal is not considered muad for the five things, right? Kicking, biting, etc. So the owner should only have to pay half damages. So now the Talmud asks the question, whose? Mani. What does that mean? It means whose opinion is this following? Is the Mishnah following? And if you remember, we discussed this in the past, and we had a debate between the rabbis, the sages, and Rabbi Tarfon. And in the case of the horn, the Mishnah said the owner pays half. Rabbi Tarfon said he paid full. So by that logic, the half, the rabbis who say abnormal horn in the courtyard of the damaged party pays half. So the Gemara is saying that this Mishnah follows the rabbis, half damages. But there's a problem. The concluding clause, the Seifa, remember we have the Resha, the opening clause, and the Seifa, the concluding clause. The Seifa that we just read, an ox that damages in the domain of the damaged party and the human being. That's the whole quote. Rabbi Tarfon says, this should pay full. So the second part of the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Tarfon, who holds that the owner pays full compensation for unusual damages done by an ox on the property of the damaged party. So the Talmud asks, okay, the Resha goes according to the rabbis and the Seifa goes according to Rabbi Tarfon, which is weird because we don't split opinions. It's either one or the other. And here the answer is yes, because Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, toothy one, we talked about that, Shanina, it's the same word as Shane. It means like sharp guy, smarty pants. Leave the Mishnah and follow me. In other words, don't look at the Mishnah. I have this tradition that says the first part is the rabbis and the last part is Rabbi Tarfon. Now, everyone gets, again, when we're trying to figure out who owns which part, because this is now answer number one to this question of whose opinion does it follow? And we are going to have three more. And it's going to get a little complicated and repetitive. So that was answer number one. Here comes answer number two. And remember again, the question is, whose opinion are we following in the Mishnah? Rabbi Elazar said in the name of Rav, all of the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Tarfon. And it does this in its usual way by bringing in a new factor that wasn't there before. So we talked about the damage in the victim's courtyard, but now he adds a piece to that. It's a courtyard that is set aside to store fruit or store produce versus a courtyard that is set aside for oxen. With regard to tooth, it is the courtyard of the damaged party. And with regard to horn, it is public property. In other words, if the offending ox is liable, if it is produce in a private courtyard, but it's not liable if it's other ox in a public property. So therefore, he pays full damages when you take that into effect. And therefore, Rabbi Tarfon could be the author of the Mishnah. So that's answer number two. Objection. This is going to be a pattern. Rav Kahana said, I related this teaching before Rav Zvid of Nahardia. Nahardia is the Harvard and Yale of Yeshivot in Babylonia. And he said to me, come on, are you really able to ascribe all of this to Rabbi Tarfon? Didn't we have a teaching that the tooth is muad to eat what is appropriate for it? That which is appropriate for it, yes. But that which is, and you'll notice, Michelle, it says een again.
Yep. Well, now I know what I'm looking at.
but see, you never know if it's you have to know first if it's Aramaic or Hebrew. But that which is not appropriate for it, no. But if Rabbi Tarfon did he not say that for abnormal horn in the courtyard of the damaged party, he pays full. So again, Rav Zvid argues the whole Mishnah cannot be made to accord with Rabbi Tarfon. The Mishnah says the tooth is muad to eat that which is fit for it. But if the animal eats things that are not fit for it, the owner would only pay half damages. But if this occurs in the courtyard owned by the victim, as Rav stated, then why shouldn't he have to pay full damages? After all, Rabbi Tarfon holds with regard to unusual damages done by the horn, that if it's done on the victim's property, the owner pays full damages. Eating something it does not normally eat is horn, not tooth. And Rabbi Tarfon obligates full damage in the victim's domain. Okay, so again, answer number one, the Mishnah went according to it was split. Answer number two, the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Tarfon. We have an objection to that. Answer number three, it is all the rabbis. Rabbi Tarfon out the window. But now again, they do another interesting thing. They put in the phrase there, the chasarei, it is lacking, meaning that's the Mishnah, but we didn't get the full Mishnah. Something was left out of it. And here's how you should really read the Mishnah. And we're going to see versions of this now again too. So I'm not going to go back and show it, but there are five tom, and now he adds the words, if they are warned, then all five are muad, right? The original one said five tom and five muad. And tooth and foot are muad from the outset. And where are they muad? In the courtyard of the damaged party. So Rav Zvid adjusts the Mishnah so that it accords now with the rabbi's opinion. And he adds in this clause, if they are warned. So there are five types of damages that are considered tam, if the damage is only done once or twice. But the third time, the animal's muad and pays full damages. But tooth and foot, as it says here, are considered muad from the start, from the outset. And therefore, only if those damages are done in the domain of the damaged party. So what they've done is, they've switched, I know this is difficult without really sitting down and staring at it. They've switched that this is not about the horn anymore, but it's about tooth and foot. So there are going to be four versions of this rewriting. And this is the first. And I'm going to tell you up front, I'm not sure how different they all are from each other. So again, this is the third attempt to answer the question of whose opinion this follows. And here we have, it's all the rabbis. And of course, we have an objection. So this time it's Ravina. He is a sixth generation Babylonian Amora. So he's pretty far on. He raises a challenge on Rav Zvid. It is taught later on, an ox that does damage on the damaged party's premises, how so? Granted, if you say, okay, it is taught later on. So what he's doing now is referring to something we haven't seen yet. It's something that's further on in the Talmud. And in this chapter, this is in the next chapter, the Mishnah refers to an ox that does damage, horn damage on the victim's premises. The Mishnah pretends that this ox is the one talked about above. But according to Rav Zvid, the Mishnah in chapter 1 was referring to tooth and foot This one's referring to horn. So how do we reconcile this? And if you look at the bottom, it said, if you say it deals with this, but if you say it does not deal with this, it's talking about that future case. So that's confusing. How do we reconcile it? So now we have the fourth answer to this again. And now we have Ravina this time rewriting the Mishnah. Once again, Chasurei, it's lacking. And here's how you should really read the Mishnah. There are five tam, and if they are warned, all five are muad. Tooth and foot are muad from the outset. And this is the muad ox. So he now adjusts, Ravina adjusts the Mishnah, so it doesn't necessarily accord with either Rabbi Tarfon or the rabbis. The first points in the Mishnah are agreed to by everyone, but Ravina now adds that when it comes to an ox that damages on the victim's premises, there's a dispute. Rabbi Tarfon says full damages, the rabbis holds half damages. And this is now the second version of this rewriting. Oh, okay. And now this is Ravina's continued rewrite of the Mishnah. An ox doing damages on the premises of the damaged party. This is what I just said. It's a dispute. We don't know the answer. And now he says, there are other muadim which are like these. The wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard. Here it's still Bartolos, but I wrote panther and the snake. So his change here is he goes on to finish this new writing of the Mishnah with a list of wild animals, which we didn't see before. And now we have a Baraita. And not surprisingly, the Baraita says the same thing Ravina just said. So the whole thing is a repetition, pretty much. There are five tam, if they are worn, they are five muad. Tooth and foot are muad from the outset. This is an ox that is muad. An ox doing damage on the victim's premises is a dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and the rabbis. There are other muadim which are like this. The wolf, the lion, the bear, the panther, the leopard, and the snake. So this again, he's finishing it up. This is Ravina's rewriting of the Mishnah. So now the Gemara is going to turn its attention to the language of the Mishnah. There are those who raise the following contradiction. We learned, this is all the way back in the Mishnah, there are five tam and five muad. But are there no more? Behold, there are the wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard, the panther, and the snake. So according to the understanding of the original Mishnah, that list contains animals that are mu'ad from the outset. So why didn't it just include that in the list of things that are mu'ad, right? Remember the list that ended with people are always mu'ad? It could have just added these guys in. And they answered, the sages. And once again, this is the last version, number four of the Mishnah, the reconstituted Mishnah. And I will just say, from my point of view, there's something lacking in the editing here. There are five tam, and if they are worn, the five become muad. The tooth and foot are muad from the outset, and this is the muad ox. An ox doing damage on the premises of the victim is a dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and the rabbis. And there are other muadim, the wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard, the panther, and the snake. So this section is essentially the same as the previous one. It's a different literary setup. Ravina is coming here not to resolve the question of who the Mishnah follows, Rabbi Tarfon and the rabbis, which we don't know the answer to, but he's trying to resolve this internal difficulty in the Mishnah itself. And so that's his answer to that. Now, finally, we leave that whole topic, if you're all fully confused, and we pick up on one of the lines in the Mishnah, which again is going to be cut. This is the last sugya for this evening. So we're talking about damages that an animal causes when it lies down on something. Earlier I called it trample. Here it's called squat. So it's not muad for squat. And what that's saying is it's the normal way of an animal to trample or to sit on something and break it. So Rabbi Elazar teaches, they taught only large pitchers, but small pitchers, it is usual. In other words, it is only unusual for an animal to break a large vessel by lying down on it. For small vessels, this is not unusual, and thus he would have to pay full damages. So get that, small vessels, full damages, large vessels, half damages. Shall we say that supports? The Talmud is asking that there's a baraita that supports Rabbi Elazar's opinion. And here's the baraita. The animal is muad to walk in its way and to break or crush a human being or an animal or a vessel. So the baraita says an animal is muad to do these things. And if this refers to squatting on vessels, we can then assume it refers to small vessels and thus supports Rabbi Elazar. However, it's not clear that this baraita is talking about squatting. It seems to be talking about walking. So we have a contradiction. So how do we reconcile that with Rabbi Elazar? And the answer is perhaps from the side. So what that means, it's talking about an animal that break things from the side, meaning if it crushes a pot, let's say, against a wall, that's from the side. So it's not walking, it's not squatting, it's siding it.
That's shaying.
Okay, there are those who say, Ika da Amri. So it's telling you there's a little different version of this material. That Rabbi Elazar really said, do not say it is large pitchers for which this is unusual, but small pitchers for which it is usual. Rather, even small pitchers are unusual. So he's saying that it's always unusual for an animal to damage something by lying down on it, and it doesn't matter how big it is. That's the rewritten Rabbi Elazar. But they objected, because there's a difficulty now with the baraita we just read. In other words, or crush a human being or an animal or vessels. Because again, it's not, those are not squatting activities. And again, they invoke Rabbi Elazar saying, perhaps it's from the side. So from the side, it is usual to damage any vessel, but for lying down, only large vessels. And finally, there arose those who raised a contradiction. We have learned nor to squat. In other words, that's what was taught, don't squat. But it was also taught, or crush a human being or animal or utensils. So in this version here, we have two Tannaitic sources which disagree with each other. And Rabbi Elazar comes to solve the contradiction. Because he says, there is no contradiction, la kasha. The first case refers to large vessels. The second case refers to small vessels. And note that in this resolution, we threw out the on the side argument entirely. And with that, we are done for tonight.
Yashikah.
Yashikah.
What's the